Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hello, babies. Welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Kate Spencer.
And I'm Dori Shafrir. You know it's going to be a good episode when Kate opens it with, hey, babies.
Well, you know, I think we got either a text message or someone DM'd me and was like, "Can call us babies more often. It feels really good." And I was like, oh, and popped back into my brain as we were recording. And also, you know, Lucy just rolled into the office and helped herself to the chair next to me. So she's sitting here.
Oh, Lucy.
Yeah. So it's, we've calling everybody babies and we've got a dog in the room. So it feels good.
Bo is in my office.
Is he really?
Yeah, he just took up residence on my couch like
recently,
an hour and a half ago.
They must know. Do you think these dogs are like, we heard that the siren call of the Welcome to Forever 35.
What's funny is I was on the Peloton bike and he like, I was getting ready to get on the bike and he like came over and was like, trying to get around. I have this like poof that I sometimes like put my legs up on when I sit on the couch, and he was like trying to maneuver around the poof, and I was like, okay, Bo, here you go. And then he got up on the couch, he was like all comfy cozy, and then Matt came home like half an hour into the ride. Bo got up, like went to see what was going on, and then just like trotted back, mm-hmm, got back mm-hmm. up on the couch. He's like, I'm here
to work. I want to listen to you record podcasts.
Exactly.
All day long. Well, we kind of forgot to tell everybody everything else, but
we did.
Yeah, we're not experts. We're two friends who like to talk a lot about serums is the gist of this show.
It's true. And you can visit our website, which is forever35podcast.com. We put links to everything we mention on the show up on the website. We're also trying a new experiment. Let us know what you think with transcripts of the podcast.
Hell yeah.
Thumbs up, thumbs down. I mean, do people care?
I mean, it definitely makes it more accessible.
Totally. So I'm just curious, like, what do people think? Let us know in the comments.
Let us know.
You can follow us on Twitter at Forever 35 Pod, on Instagram at Forever 35 Podcast, and join the Forever 35 Facebook group. The password over there is serums.
And you can also sign up for our newsletter at forever35podcast.com/newsletter. That comes out about twice a month.
It's coming out tomorrow.
Oh, snap. Okay, we'll get on that then, everybody.
Yeah.
If you would like to reach us, you can send us a voicemail or a text message at 781-591-0390. And our email is forever35podcast@gmail.com.
Indeed. Kate.
Yes, Dor.
I have some news.
Share it loud, share it proud.
We don't have COVID.
Great news. Best news of the week.
Best news of the week.
I'm so happy because you had quite an exposure.
Yeah, we did. We had an outdoor play date with two other toddlers, which, you know, in theory should be safe. But I sort of just like forgot. I don't know. I like one of the other moms brought bagels and one of the moms brought croissants. And like we were all just sitting there eating. And like at one point, Henry like picked up a piece of bagel that one of the other kids had been eating and just like ate it. And I was like, yeah, you can finish that. Like, I just was sort of like, la-di-da. And
it was like, you fell into normalcy.
Yeah. I was like, oh, that kid got COVID. So I think normally I wouldn't have been that stressed about an outdoor play date with an asymptomatic, or I guess pre-symptomatic child. Because like they, you know, they're 2.5, so they don't really play together. Like they were kind of, they weren't like on top of each other at all. But the food thing, I was like, oh, God damn it. So that really sent me spiraling. And then, you know, we had to isolate Henry for 5 days post-exposure, get him a PCR on day 5, watch him for symptoms. And it was just like, oh, gosh, you know, so no childcare. It was just, so in addition, no childcare, it's just like that added stress of like, does he or doesn't he?
Yeah.
Do I have COVID? Like,
yeah. You know? Especially because it's with Omicron, it's like kind of coming in so late. Like people are symptomatic, but still testing negative. And
well,
it's just,
you know,
a bit of a journey.
I've heard that that is true for vaccinated people.
Oh, see, that okay, that's where I exist.
That there's something about how Omicron like interacts with the vaccines that, and look, I am not a doctor. I'm literally reading like Twitter threads about this, but anecdotally, I've also heard many, many people who have gotten Omicron who have had symptoms for 2 to 3 days before it shows up on a positive test.
Same.
Whereas this child who had it tested positive on a rapid when he still did not have symptoms.
Wow.
So I just thought that was interesting. Anyway, I was like, okay, if we develop any symptoms, I'm just going to assume that we have it, even if we're testing negative. But we never got symptoms. And I was just like, wow, Dulit fucking dodged there. Like, oh man.
Yeah, bullet dodged. For now. I mean,
not to be exactly
not to be pessimistic, but you and I were just
week.
Yeah, I mean, we were just talking about how like how have we, I mean, your husband had it, my daughter had it, so it's been in our homes, but like how have we not all gotten COVID at this point is, you know, a fluke.
Totally.
I read
totally.
Someone like shared a tweet that was like, I haven't gotten COVID. It's 2022. And I feel like I'm playing dodgeball and like my line of defense is very thin. Yeah. Yep. Yep. When Eleanor and I were, Eleanor was sick and I thought she had COVID and we were in line to get a PCR for her. And we were behind this like group of teen girls who go to our local high school. And it was fascinating. Like their whole conversation was just like, who was exposed and who's out and who won't get vaccinated and they're vaccinated. And like, it was fascinating. And it like made me kind of sad because I was like, oh man, these teen girls, like this, they should be talking about like teen girl stuff, you know, like living their best teen girl life. But then I also was like very fond of them and how like up and aware they were. So
aww.
I know those teen girls didn't know that a mom, two people behind them was listen, eavesdropping and feeling all sorts of ways about their conversation.
Well, and I mean, you know, you talk about like what kids do and don't kind of understand. It's like, you know, Henry is not even 3 and like knows what a COVID test is, has taken many of them. He used to kind of be okay taking them, and now he is just not about them. And the last PCR we had to take
was just not about it.
And like, that's also just really hard to have to like subject your child to, and explain to him, like, you're not going to school and your nanny's not coming because your friend ended up having COVID and we have to wait and see if you're getting sick. Like, it's just like, huh? You know? So that's also like, I don't know, just the way we live now, I guess.
Yeah, I was thinking like my kids will remember this and did I share this sadness? I think I did. Then we could talk about something less sad, but my daughter and two of her friends had like a play date where they were like making movies. They were like recording themselves performing Encanto and like dressing up and doing this whole spiel. And the mom was sending me photos of them and they were just like being kids you know, like just being kids. And I was like, they haven't really had time to do that with their friends for 2 years. And it just, again, made me so sad. And then as someone pointed out, like, but also I'm so grateful that they can't even do that. Like, yes, great. So, you know, it's just this bittersweet kind of feeling of like, this is going to fully impact their lives in ways I'm not clear on. Maybe, you know, maybe it'll just be like a weird chunk of time that they just remember and like are fine, you know, who knows? But it's just,
totally.
It's strange that it's even a thing. Well, Dori, on a completely non-COVID related topic.
Yes.
I met with the nutritionist that I had previously worked with in kind of establishing an intuitive eating practice.
Mm-hmm. And I'm listening.
I did. I, if you may recall, this is all documented on past episodes of this podcast, but I worked through basically the entire intuitive eating workbook program, and it was really helpful, and it really kind of changed the course of how I, you know, my relationship to food and my body. It was great. But anyway, got my blood test results back a few weeks ago, got some stuff I needed to look at. So I met with her. She reviewed my blood work and we like went in depth on everything. And it was really helpful. It was really helpful having her decipher my blood tests as opposed to my primary care physician. Yeah, it was interesting. Like what she was able to really kind of get into the weeds. And I have a certain iron thing that's going on too. And that can be connected to hormones. Like she was just really, very helpful and kind of like one being like, you don't need to become a vegan. And two, you know, just helping me figure out a really like, easy approach to making some small adjustments in what I'm eating and also like additions to what I'm eating, not just like eliminating the butter.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, the butter does need to go on hiatus for a bit. So,
okay. All right.
Yeah. So I'm going to do a little bit of like a dairy hiatus.
Okay. And, a full dairy hiatus.
Man, I'm not like, I don't plan on being super restrictive because that doesn't work well with my, brain.
Yeah.
But cutting back and finding alternatives and then also just, you know, red meat, trying to not eat as much. I'm not like I was eating a ton, but like, you know, just be thoughtful with it and focus more on, you know, the fishes and the beans and the white meats.
Yep. Yeah.
And also some supplements, Dori.
Oh, interesting.
So,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel good about that. I feel good about it. It's also just fun telling people how much butter I've been eating. It's truly, truly a humbling experience every time to just formally announce that I eat butter as a snack.
Yeah. I mean, we're already hearing from listeners about it.
Yeah, someone was like, I never knew other people ate plain butter besides me. And I was like, I've been here the whole time.
Well,
I've been waiting for you.
You have talked about it a bit on this podcast, but maybe people didn't quite understand the extent.
I mean, you didn't. You didn't know.
I did not. And
the only people who really like probably know are my family members because they open the butter and see teeth marks in the butter because sometimes I will just take I'll just bite it.
Like it's a candy bar.
Yes, exactly. Like it's a hunk of chocolate. Butter is the perfect, salted butter is the perfect salty, sweet treat. I mean, it really is. It's so delicious. I also, Dori, just wanted to give a shout out to a lipstick because.
Okay, all right.
I feel transformed by this freaking lipstick. Now, the thing with lipstick is it's not going to be for everyone because truly, you know, everybody has different colors they like and colors that they think works with their skin tone.
Indeed.
But this lipstick has changed my freaking life. NARS sent me a bunch of lipsticks and this one I just like randomly had and threw on one day and now I'm wearing it every day. That's it now. I'm a lipstick woman.
It's what you were wearing yesterday, right?
Yeah, you complimented me on it.
Was it yesterday? Like, the day before, 2 days ago.
No, yeah. It was yesterday. I had it on in a Zoom
yesterday.
Oh,
that's right. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yep. And it's just truly like the most, my most favorite color of any lipstick I've ever tried. I mean, I'm going to try to keep exploring this world of orangey reds, but I don't know. It just makes me pop. It makes me pop. It like does. I can just wear that and I look put together in a way, like no other makeup or anything. And I just, I look good.
You do.
I look good.
You look great.
I look good. So I just have to give a shout out to Heatwave by NARS.
Great.
It's so freaking great. It's a $26. It's a matte bright orange red. You can find it on their website or wherever you purchase makeup. And it is their lipstick formula. And it stays on for a while. I find it really lasts for a while.
Amazing.
All you need is one great lipstick to just pull it all together.
That is really, really true.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that's it. That's all you need.
Yep.
Do you have one right now that you love? I know you had the story of the $48 Tom Ford lipstick.
Oh my God. I think it was like $52.
Such a great story.
I mean, I just like the pandemic has just like taken all like desire for me to wear any makeup. So I haven't really been playing around with lipsticks, but now that I know my colors,
maybe everything's changed.
Go back and try to find a new fun lipstick like you, because I feel like this is really bringing you a lot of joy.
You know what? I've been making these videos for my book promotion. And so I want to look like kind of put together for the video. Like I want to give people a good version of me.
Right. Sure.
But all I need is this lipstick and I keep it by my computer. And I haven't worn it like out on the town. And obviously I'm always in a mask anyway. So what would be the point? But I think when this variant dies down and I start, partying again, going out on the party circuit, you know me.
Oh, I do.
Always be partying.
Always be partying.
The Kate Spencer motto, always be partying. I'm excited to kind of give it a whirl, like in the going out world someday, if that ever comes back around.
I mean, TBD.
It would be fun just to go out to dinner, period. And like, I know we can do that now, but going out to dinner without thinking about pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without having it to be like, oh, here we go. Let's take our masks off now.
Yeah, totally.
Do this QR code and show our vaccine cards. Mm. Well, Dory.
Yes, Kate.
Someday we will get there.
Someday.
Right?
Yes, I hope so.
Dory, shall we introduce our guest on today's episode?
I would love to do that.
Today we're talking to Abigail Hing Wen. She's amazing. Let's just first like say this. She's amazing. She talked to us at 6:30 in the morning. She's in Taiwan right now.
Yeah.
So it was 6:30 her time while we were talking to her. And look, she didn't miss a beat.
No,
she really you were interviewing didn't. Me at 6:30 in the morning. It would be rough around the edges. Abigail is the New York Times bestselling author of Love Boat Taipei, which is currently being turned into a movie, which is why she was in Taiwan. She's a producer on the film. And she's also the author of its highly anticipated sequel, Love Boat Reunion, which just came out yesterday. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Abigail was born in West Virginia to a family of immigrants. Her mother is from the Philippines and her father is from Indonesia. And her grandparents emigrated to those countries from China. Abigail grew up in Ohio and graduated from Harvard University and Columbia Law School. And as a young adult, she attended the Love Boat program in Taipei that inspired her first novel. She also worked in DC for the Senate as a law clerk for a federal judge and in Silicon Valley in venture capital and artificial intelligence. But that's not all. She also earned her Master of Fine Arts in Writing from Vermont College of Fine Arts. And in her spare time, she enjoys long walks with her husband and two boys and hanging out with her friends and over 100 family members in the Bay Area. That's amazing. I wish I had 100 family members, period. But I wish they also all lived near me.
I know. It sounds amazing. Slightly overwhelming, but like mostly amazing.
What a fun, like any party. You have like a guaranteed good time. It just sounds amazing. I miss my extended family. but they're definitely not 100 of us.
No, same.
Anyway, we really enjoyed our conversation with Abigail, and we got some fun makeup and skincare tips too. So
we did.
Yeah.
Yep.
So look out. Those are coming for you. All right. Well, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Abigail.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I like to care for my skin, duh. And It's also something that I do love to kind of like get into the research on.
You do have a curious mind.
Look, I have a curious mind. I can't help it.
You do.
But today's sponsor, OneSkin, has made that easy because they do their own fantastic research for their products. In fact, their products are scientifically validated to improve your skin's health while targeting the root cause of aging. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin. And they've got several studies to back it up. They also have an amazing new sunscreen.
Ooh, our favorite.
Our fave. It's the OS1 Shield Protect and Repair SPF 30 Plus. It's got the peptide. It's a mineral sunscreen. It's got antioxidants. It comes in tinted and untinted. I mean, like, what can't this thing do? I'm just saying. I love it. It's so easy to use, and I love that it's just like zoop and it feels so nice going on. But don't take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews and was recently recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands of 2024. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code FOREVER at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code FOREVER. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support your show and tell them we sent you.
Well, our guest today is Abigail Hing-Wen. Abigail, welcome to Forever 35. We are so excited to talk to you because you have literally done almost too many things in your life.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to speak with you.
So I want to start by asking about a self-care practice, and then we're going to get to hopefully talk about all sorts of things, from AI to writing romance to your many interesting career paths. But we always start by asking guests for a self-care practice that they have in their own life that they might be willing to share with our listeners. And it can really be anything that brings you comfort and joy on a regular daily basis.
Yeah. So I loved that you allowed me to show up for the podcast any way I am. So I think you said something about, I can come as I am, or I can come dressed to go out. And it's 6:30 a.m. in Taiwan, and I decided, I'm not going to wear makeup. And I love being able to take a break like that, because I've been here. I'm sure we'll talk more, but I've been on set in Taiwan for the past 3 months filming and I've been on every single day, wearing makeup every single day. And now I'm on a break with my family. We're doing a tour around the island and I haven't worn makeup in about 4 days and my skin is so happy. So I'm thrilled to be able to take those breaks when I can.
Are you are a regular makeup wearer, like an everyday makeup person?
I normally am not when I'm just at home, like doing my daily thing. I wear makeup to go out, but because I've been in Taiwan filming, I've been like lots of makeup every day.
And let's clarify, you are in Taiwan filming because you are a producer on the movie adaptation of your book.
That's right, of Love Boat Taipei.
That's amazing.
I mean, tell us everything.
Let's circle back.
Yeah. You're very casual about it, but like, this is a big deal.
It's a huge deal.
It's been pretty surreal for sure. Yeah. Where even to begin?
So okay. Let's start by I guess maybe kind of starting about, I'm all over the place. Let's start just kind of discussing your many career trajectories, because you have such an interesting background. And I actually think that's why it's so exciting that you are on the set of your book's movie, because you haven't been writing books your entire life, or you haven't been publishing books your entire life. Let's say you've been doing a million other interesting things. You've worked in AI, you have a law degree, you also have an MFA in writing. So could you kind of, I know it's a lot to try to say in a few minutes on a podcast, but kind of give us the start of what your professional career has been and how you have ended up where you are on a movie set?
Yeah, so I started off I was studying government and international relations at Harvard, and I went on to law school. In between, I did a stint in Washington, D.C. on Capitol Hill. So I worked for 2 years on the House of Representatives and on the Senate Judiciary Committee. And I thought that was my path. That was law, government, politics. I had done thesis research in China on a variety of topics, actually, like human rights, intellectual property. And yeah, I don't even remember the third prong anymore, but I think it had to do with commerce. But I think over time, I started to realize, you know, the same themes that I was pursuing around social justice questions, around poverty and poverty alleviation, and these other policy questions, I could answer them really in any industry. You didn't have to be in government to do that. And it kind of came to a head for me because my husband wanted us to move to California. My husband's at Google, and you know, Silicon Valley is really his town. He's a techie. So in Washington, D.C., he was like the nerdy guy coming to parties, like geeking out over cool gadgets. And I was in law making the product. And so in Silicon Valley, it was reversed. And so, you know, I think I kind of came to terms with that, like, oh, I don't have to be in law and government to fulfill these same issues that I cared about. And so, you know, I started practicing law here in venture law, and it was fun. I was working with startup companies. And I thought I kind of had to give up that other side of myself, but still find ways to implement the same kind of thesis in my life. The same time I was writing novels. And I found like, really, I think of myself as just kind of living out that same thesis in every space that I've touched. So while I was in the corporation, I thought, you know, I worked on things like, we looked at a woman's fund for venture capital, because we realized that women were being underfunded. They tended to have to prove themselves with harder numbers. It was harder for new teams, especially, to gain the trust of investors. And, you know, we kind of looked at reasons why that was happening. And so that's kind of been a theme again throughout everything I took on. And then in artificial intelligence, it was similar. I would speak about ethics around AI and the ways that the technology was being built that could potentially be exclusive, excluding minority groups that weren't represented in the data. And you know, we saw this with some of the iconic headlines, like there was a headline where an early algorithm for human resources was not correlating women with leadership roles. And so then, you know, fast forward, this whole time I'm also writing on the side. I wrote 5 novels on the way to Love Boat Taipei. And Love Boat Taipei was the one that finally came out into the world. And I think the themes are consistent with the rest of my life. It's a girl going to Asia. It's about identity, trying to understand her identity between Eastern and Western cultures. It's about dance, which I love, and choosing the traditional path versus the path that her heart is calling her towards, which is dance versus medicine. So I would say yeah, it may seem on the outside to be disparate things, but for me, it has always felt like internally consistent. And so now we come to my last book, which is about to come out, Love But Reunion. And this one, again, is integrating various aspects of my life. It's about a girl, Sophie Ha, who's now trying to marry her interests in artificial intelligence with her very kind of girly personality. So I'm excited to have that drop into the world on January 25th.
Yeah, I think this is coming out the day after your book comes out.
Oh, amazing.
So people will be able to get it. Well, you know, you mentioned AI a few times, and I would love if you could give us just kind of a general overview of what do we mean when we talk about AI and what are the kind of like practical applications of AI in people's lives that like maybe we don't know about. Because I admit to having a pretty like fuzzy conception of what AI can actually do.
Yeah, I feel like everything I understand about it is like from science fiction movies from the 90s.
Yeah, so I think you probably are experiencing AI all the time. It's in your cell phones, it's like in Google Maps, and you know, it's a way of computers processing a lot of information and drawing patterns from that information. And what I think of it is it's like AI is making our lives easier and better. I know there's a lot of science fiction out there, and some of that actually is actually inspiring for the science field. Like I remember reading Isaac Asimov's books when I was younger, and there are devices on there that are actually iPhones, but he wrote this, you know, many, many years before. So what you read in science fiction is not actually necessarily that far from what's going on in the field, because the two, I think, inform each other. But I would say, you know, in terms of AI, that's human level intelligence, that there's, you know, fear around taking over the world, that we're nowhere near that.
Okay, thank
you. Reassuring.
Okay, good. I thought it was interesting that you mentioned racist bias within AI, because I also feel like when it comes to kind of understanding it, that's not something that, you know, we're necessarily familiar with. Could you dig into that a little bit more?
Yeah, so the area of artificial intelligence now that's, you know, quite, there's been a lot of research devoted is in machine learning and deep learning. And that is, again, looking through large amounts of data and being able to build algorithms that make predictions based on that historical data. And so, you know, in the example I gave about human resources algorithm, I don't know all the inner workings of that particular one, but the idea would be like, let's build a machine that can take a look at all our resumes. And just surface the good ones. Like, so we don't have to bother reading all of them ourselves, which, you know, I think is a completely legitimate need, because we do need a way to just quickly move through millions of papers so that we can find the best talent for our organizations, the best fit, right? And so you build an algorithm that ideally would find the best candidates for the jobs that you're looking for. But the problem with using historical data is that, as it turns out, it reflects historical biases. So if you're, you know, and let me give a real world example to describe historical bias. When I was clerking for Judge Rogers on the DC circuit, she was serving on the hiring committee for Harvard Law School. And this, you know, many years ago, one of the questions that came up was like, well, we want all of our candidates to have had Supreme Court clerkships. And a lot of these women, unfortunately, have not had Supreme Court clerkships. And the judge, you know, this is the reason why you need diverse people on these leadership decision-making panels. She's like, well, they can't get the Supreme Court clerkships because they're not being hired as Supreme Court clerks. And so that's an example of systemic bias that's perpetuated. So a require where there's bias in one system that's being used as criteria for another system. And then the second system is going to have less of those qualified candidates. And so the same thing was happening with these algorithms, except on a much larger scale. And unless you have people who can identify, hey, this facial recognition algorithms and working on darker skin, right? Like, unless you have people can actually point it out, sometimes it's hard for the people building it to see that. But I think there has actually been a lot of work in ethics and artificial intelligence that I'm very encouraged by. Partnership on AI is doing great work in the space, especially. And I love it that so many people are thinking about it and are more cognizant of it.
I love that you really can see the connection in your passions and your career and the work that you do. I thought you explain that in such a really powerful way. And I find it especially moving because we often get a lot of listener questions about making changes in one's career, like very big changes, especially, you know, in your 40s or late 30s or even 50s. And one question we get a lot is like, is it too late for me? Can I still try this thing that I've always wanted to do? And I find that especially moving and just in kind of learning about how you came to writing novels. Have you ever experienced that feeling yourself, or have there ever been moments of rejection or failure where you have felt knocked down and decided to keep going?
Yes, I've had many of those points of rejection along the way. I think a writer's life is mostly rejection, similar mm-hmm. to actors. I've been chatting with my actors about that. A lot of auditions to get to the one yes. It's funny. I've done a couple of these interviews about second chances, and I don't really think of that as my path. Again, for me, it feels linear, even though on the surface it doesn't look that way.
No, but when you explain it, it is so clearly linear. It actually reminds me of it reminded me of kind of my own strange, like, jobs that I've had. They are actually very connected and deeply built off the other. So I think it totally makes sense.
Yeah, I have been writing my whole life. I started telling stories to my brother and sister when we were really small, and I've been journaling since I was 9. I think what I didn't know was that I could write professionally. But even then, you know, I think I've been writing throughout college, my papers for my government concentration, then law school. And then I took my job clerking, even though I was going to go into corporate law. I decided to take a clerkship, one, because it was a year of public service with an amazing human being. But two, it was an opportunity to learn to grow as a writer, and I did. So when we wrote opinions of the court, either the judge or I would write the first draft of the opinion, and then the other would write version 2, right on top of you, and back and forth. And we'd go up to version 25. I still use that process today with my own writing, where I create new versions of my novel every time I do a major revision. But I learned to write from her. She, she took my words and she turned them into something else, and I got to do that to her. And so you just kind of learn the editing processes is for everybody. So yeah, so I would say that, you know, I've been writing my whole life, and it's now coming. I've now, I think, reached the stage where it's ready to come out in the world in a public way. But all those skills have been built over many years.
Can we just take things back a little bit? Because I think we got sidetracked initially, because we usually open our conversations by asking our guests about a self-care practice that they have. And I'd love to know if there's anything that you are doing currently, and if there's something that you do differently when you're away from home versus when you're at home.
So I love hot baths. Home, I have an outdoor hot tub, which I am in literally every single night. And I think it's just that feeling of being submersed in the water. I'm under the stars. It's where I relax and I can really settle. So fortunately, while I was here in Taiwan, my hotel had an amazing bathtub, which I was in as often as I could be. And now I'm actually speaking to you from this Japanese style hotel. I'm on tour around the island with my family, which is in the town that's known for hot springs. So last night we were on the roof sitting in these hot springs, and we have in our bathroom in the hotel, like a stoned hot springs tub built into the floor in this little outdoor space. So I'm so happy to be here.
Okay, wait, I want to circle back to your nightly hot tub routine. You have two kids also. So how did you establish that time for yourself? Or maybe you are amazing at setting boundaries and you and your partner like just have it handled, but is it hard for you to carve out that time? Because I feel like making a ritual like that requires such commitment. And I'm admire that you have that.
Yeah. So we moved into this particular house about 6 years ago. So that's when I started. And my husband is the one who found the house. And he's like, let me sell you on this house. This is why this is the house for us. He showed me the hot tub outside. I'm like, oh my gosh, I love you. So I think my kids are a bit older. So, you know, I think that made it easier. I don't know. I can't remember those years when they were younger. It's all a blur.
Yeah, you and me both.
You're right. It's incredibly hard when you have young children. But, you know, I try to incorporate my kids into like many things. So for a while, I was like having them sit with me out there. But I'm really the diehard dedicated one to the hot tub.
Do you look at your phone or read or do anything like that? Or do you give your brain just kind of free range to just think, or how do you kind of, what do you bring with you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I used to, sometimes I'll have my phone out there with me if I'm like expecting phone calls or meetings that come through. And I actually have a way of sitting there with my laptop too. So,
oh my gosh.
Sometimes when I'm sitting there, like ideas will kind of strike. And so I'll want to like reach over, jot them down before I lose them. But mostly I'm just thinking and reflecting when I'm in the tub.
Writing in a hot tub sounds like the best way to write a book. Like way better than just sitting in this uncomfortable chair that I'm in right now. That sounds amazing.
I am definitely guilty of writing some of the words of my novels in the hot tub.
That's so great. That is I think you're the first writer I've ever heard who has done that. Although I hope others reveal themselves.
I
That's amazing.
It to everyone.
How have you handled rejection as a writer? I mean, is it something that you feel comfortable taking in stride, or has it been kind of a learning process?
Yeah, it's definitely been a journey. Writing is so personal and you try not to take it personally. And I think I have evolved to the place where I'm more thick-skinned about it. But, you know, for sure, those early years, I wrote my first novel and I had friends read it in 2 days and they loved it. And it was so fun. It just poured out of me and it totally got rejected by all the agents. And that was hard. I was like, oh, I guess this won't be as easy as I had hoped. So this is first novel of 5 novels that didn't get published.
Wow.
And, you know, I've had hundreds of rejections along the way. And every time you send out a query, you have so much hope for each of those that, well, this agent that you've been like, you know, Twitter stalking, that they say all these things that you love and you love them, and then they just send you back like a form rejection. Like, that's really painful. So I think I've just gone through so many that I've grown, but I've done a lot of therapy along the way. I think what's really helped me is to, love the process. And I love writing. Like, that is why I write. I write because it settles me, because I can't not write. And like, even now, like, as I mentioned, I'm on tour with my family. Like, I'm like, yesterday or 2 days ago, I said, you know, I think I need to write. And I'm feeling really antsy, and it's because I haven't in a while. So, I remember hearing another author once say, like, if you feel compelled to write because someone is telling you you have to, like, I give you permission to give it up. And at the same time, like, if you want to write because you want to, then I also give you permission to do that. And I really appreciated that. I think that's really important.
I don't think you touched on this, but is your family with you in Taiwan?
They are. Yes.
You said you're traveling throughout the island. Can you talk a little bit about that, what it's like having them there with you?
It's so special to have them with me, because it's actually my 5th trip myself to Taiwan. The first time I was 12 with my own family that I grew up with, my brother and sister, my parents. Then I came for Love Boat, which became the inspiration for the book. The third time was in 2018 when I was researching book one. Then October of 2020 for book 2 research. And then now I'm here for the film. So it's really special for me to have them. This tour around the island I've done 3 times, once on Love Boat, once on my tour all by myself, and then now with them. And it's a lot more communal, less time to myself, less thinking time, less writing time. But I get to share the things that I love with them. Yeah. So we just saw the Taroko Gorge together yesterday. We hiked it. It's one of the natural wonders out here. And then we went to Fo Guanshan, which is an incredible Buddhist monastery with hundreds and hundreds of Buddhist statues, like, just laid out throughout these incredible grounds. So again, I was like, these are the 2 things you really need to see while you're touring in the south of Taiwan. So it's so fun to share my world with them.
Oh, that's so cool. So we're just going to take a short break and we will be right back. Okay, we're back.
Can you talk about your own Love Boat experience and explain for listeners what that is, for those who might not be familiar, which I was not familiar, and how it became the inspiration for Love Boat Taipei?
So Love Boat is a program that's been around since the 1960s, started by the local government here. It was to encourage overseas Chinese youth to reconnect with their parents' heritage, and that's exactly what it does. So I received an invitation. I was a presidential scholar in high school, so the Taiwanese government would go through the list of scholarships, like Koch scholars and what's now the Google scholarship, and everyone with a Chinese last name received an invitation to this trip for free. So I was like, sure, that sounds amazing. And I came with a bunch of other presidential scholars. I think there were six of us my summer, and discovered it was actually this thing called Love Boat, nicknamed Love Boat by everyone, because it was a place that kids were actually sent to find someone to marry. But in actuality, it was like, there's no parental supervision. The kids were seeking out clubbing. They were, going out on the town. We did this tour around the island that I loved. And it just kind of became known as the summer free for all, and was very well known in the Asian American community, but not really well known outside of it. And eventually I decided to write a fictionalized story of the experience.
And how has it been? I mean, it's so interesting hearing you talk about having written five novels and the experience of rejection, because now you're a New York Times bestselling author and you're on the set of your movie, and you're a producer on the movie, which I think is so cool. What has that been like to actually see these humans that you created come to life in this way?
Yeah, it has been like nothing else. I describe it, and I think on my social media and a couple of the pieces about, it's like Loki coming face to face with another Loki. It's really like experiencing the multiverse, because these characters, they came out of my imagination. They're inspired by things that I know, and yet someone else is holding the pen for the screenplay and making them do things and that I've never made them do. But, one thing I really loved about this process, like the characters are really true to themselves. So with the filming process, it's been the same. Like, we do so many takes of each scene, and there's so many scenes, and so I get to see like the characters iterating over and over again. And of course, to meet the cast has been such an incredible joy. Like, they're all so well casted, and I love them all. I love them all.
That's so wonderful. I mean, that's such a surreal thing. I can't imagine it as a writer myself, and it's got to be so surreal. And then to actually have this emotional connection with the people playing them sounds so special.
It is really incredibly special. Like, I was able to have an in-depth conversation with each person about their character, and just to trade notes. And how special is that?
Oh,
yeah. They know their characters almost as well as I do, and that was really incredible.
That's really cool, because I feel like authors, there's such a wide range of experiences when authors see their work translated into movies or TV. So it's really nice to hear that you've had a positive experience. I have a question, which is, I know we touched on makeup, but what about skincare? Are you someone who is into skincare? What products do you use? What is your routine? Can we hear about it?
My mom actually was really into skincare when I was growing up. So she got me introduced to Shiseido very early on. I use Shiseido products probably since I was like a teenager, like early teens.
Wow.
And I think that really did pay off. But as I got older, I'm not sure why, but I somehow moved away from it. I think I just met a lot of friends who use different products, and I don't think I met anyone who used Shiseido. So
definitely not as a teen. I feel like as a teen.
So, and I would see all these advertisements. So I started using different things. I have a pretty simple skincare routine that I got from my dermatologist. So I use Cetaphil. It's like a very simple simple cleanser. It's very easy on the skin. And then my friend Saba Tahir, who's also an author, recommended grape seed oil as a cleanser. And so I started doing that. It was really great because it was hydrating, and it was a bit counterintuitive because it's oil, but it really works incredibly well. Here in Taiwan, Ashley Liao, who plays Ever Wong, recommended this oil cleanser. It's called Sekisui. I'll spell it because I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Sekkisui. And it's an oil and cleansing gel from Kose. And I've enjoyed it as well. It's kind of like similar to the grapeseed oil. Then I have, I try to use a toner of some kind. So currently I was using Fenty Skin, which is like this fat water toner that I picked up from Sephora. Sephora is like my go-to now for most of my skincare products. And then Ashley also recommended this, another product from the same brand called a brightening emulsion. So I'm kind of trying it out and seeing how it goes. And then the other thing that's been added recently to my skincare routine the past couple of years, also started by Saba and then Ashley again was encouraging it, is to do a mask. So I was doing them like once or twice a week. Just kind of a face mask that helps with moisturizing or kind of helping to retain that, hydration. And then Ashley recommended a number of products for me here too, as well. So I've been trying out various Japanese brands. The one it's in my hand right now is from Kodo Yun, J-Y-U-N. And they've all been really, really wonderful in their own ways.
Ooh, those all sound great.
Yeah, is there anything else that you can get in Taiwan that you can't get in the U.S. that you would recommend people kind of hunt down?
Yeah, so again, shout outs to Ashley. She gave me a million products. I'm like, tell me everything that you
this
think
is why
I need.
Everyone needs a Generation Z friend, right?
Yes,
everyone needs
yes.
a young 20-year-old friend.
And my actors are beautiful. So, you know, I'm like, there yes, tell me everything you know. So yeah. Ashley recommended this sunscreen Biore UV.
Oh, yeah.
It's
my favorite.
Yeah.
Iconic.
And then for makeup remover, she recommended L'Oreal Paris. Gentle lip and eye makeup remover for waterproof makeup. And we actually use the same product on set every day for removing actors' makeup. So it's great. I've really loved it, especially for the eye makeup and the mascara. And for a moisturizer, I use this Japanese brand, that I get on. I used to get it on Amazon, but it's no longer there. So I found it like on another site, but it's, Etusias, Attusais premium amino cream. And when I got it before, I feel like it had a slightly different name, but it's like, it says gel luminous baby smooth skin. It's this pink cream with these little pink balls in them. I don't know what's in it, but my friend recommended it to me and I used it for several years now and I love it.
That sounds amazing.
It does.
I mean, I want to, it doesn't, it's not a hard sell for me. You'd say there's little balls in your moisturizer and I'm like, this is so cool. I've never seen that in my life. I'll buy it. That yeah. sounds incredible.
Yeah, I had fun with them. Oh yeah, the other thing that gave that so I was in quarantine for 2 weeks here, and my I used an it was Chanel's eye cream, and I really loved it. Ooh. I'd never used it, but it was hyaluronic acid, and I felt like I had these bags under my eyes from I don't know what it was past year of COVID maybe.
Yeah, so I can do it.
My production assistant picked that up for me, and I loved it.
I appreciate that you give an eye cream a shout out, because I feel like we've been having a debate going on 4 years now on this podcast of does eye cream do anything and do we need it?
Yeah. I don't know. Actually, I would love to hear your advice. it felt good for me, for sure.
I think that was kind of what we had recently actually talked about on a recent episode, was like, even if it doesn't actually quote do anything, there is this additional just nice feeling of like a lighter, softer moisturizer going on the most delicate part of your face that just feels very good.
Yeah, I think it definitely helped. I felt like I had these dark bags under my eyes when I arrived in Taiwan, and they're gone now. So I kind of attribute that to the Chanel eye cream.
Did you do quarantine with your whole family for 2 weeks?
So I wasn't able to because they came later than me. They had to finish out school.
They were
in quarantine over the holidays.
Oh, wow. That's intense.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really surreal experience.
Yeah, what was it like doing it on your own? Did you go stir crazy?
So I actually love it. And two of my kids, that's both my kids, they also loved it. There is something really special about being able to shut out the whole world. And like nobody can reach you. You do not have to make any decisions about social engagements or parties or whether to go to this or that event at school. Like it just simplifies your life for 2 weeks. And I was able to get a lot of writing done because there's nothing else to distract me. But you know, it does get a little lonely towards the end if you're doing it by yourself. And so I think by the end, I was definitely ready to come out and see the cast and crew.
I wanted to ask, for yourself as a reader, is there a particular genre that you love? Do you read a lot of YA or romance? And is there any book that has recently kind of captured you that you would be willing to share or recommend?
So I grew up reading a lot of fantasy and science fiction, mostly fantasy. I like a lot of Robin McKinley, Princess Bride, of course. I guess that's not really, it's fantasy. A lot of portal fantasy. So I loved Harry Potter. Loved Star Wars movies. So I actually think I love about Taipei as a portal fantasy, even though it's not as a young adult contemporary novel, but it really is a portal fantasy. It's about a girl who goes into another world with its own set of rules and mores and costumes and people. And she comes back transformed to her world. And that's exactly what a portal fantasy does. So I would say the books I'd recommend now are my friend Saba, who had mentioned Saba Tahir's new novel that's coming out. It's a young adult contemporary called All My Rage. And it's a really powerful, searing, gripping story. Comes out in March. And my critique partner, Stacey Lee's Luck of the Titanic, which just came out in May of last year about 8 Chinese who are on the Titanic. And we're written out of history. So she's kind of breathe new life into them and giving them a space in the world.
That sounds really cool.
Oh, that does sound really interesting. Wow. Okay. That's a great recommendation. Thank you. I got to get reading. Do you read fantasy in your spare time still?
I actually end up watching a lot of movies now, a lot of movies and TV shows, because I've been moving into that space. So I joke that it's research for me, but I'm secretly addicted.
That's fair. That's allowed. Well, Abigail, this has been so great to get to talk to you, especially you are doing this at 6:30 in the morning, your time, we should say. So like, this is probably the earliest anyone has ever joined us on the podcast. So you get a special award for that. Thank you very much.
Oh, no, it's my pleasure. I really love what you are doing, and I'm excited to have a chance to chat with you.
So your book, your second book, the sequel to Love Boat Taipei, just came out in the last 24 hours, based on when we think this podcast is airing. Where can listeners find you? I mean, obviously, your books are available everywhere and anywhere books are sold. But where can we get more of your life?
So I have a newsletter. I send out periodic updates. And you can sign up on my website, abigailhingwen.com. I am also on social media pretty much everywhere. I'm most active on Instagram for the book world. So that's, again, Abigail Hing Wen everywhere. And thank you. I'm so thrilled that this book is out in the world. It's it follows, as I mentioned, Sophie Ha, the girl in tech, trying to marry her interests in AI with her girly interests in fashion. And Xavier Ye, who's another fan favorite, as he's trying to get up from under his controlling father's thumb. He's been forced to repeat senior year until he graduates. But really, his plan is to get his trust fund that his mother left him and get the hell out of here. So I'm excited for folks to connect with their stories and looking forward to hearing what my readers think.
Well, congratulations, too. That's so exciting.
Thank you.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
I just want to say that I kind of wish we had asked her to show us the bathtub in her hotel.
I know.
Because it sounded amazing.
I am obsessed with the idea of jacuzzing daily.
Yes, totally.
Like, it's so great on so many levels. Like, one, it sounds warm. Your skin's getting snuggly. Two, you don't have to deal with anybody. It's like delicious alone time.
Yeah.
Three, I love that sometimes she brings her laptop and works from the jacuzzi.
There's just so much that is amazing about it.
Yeah. Now, I don't have a jacuzzi. Although, you know, Caroline Moss does have like a blow-up jacuzzi.
She does. That's right.
And loves it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe this is not a complete pipe dream for you or I.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if like our husbands just like walk home one night and we're just blowing up our jacuzzis in the backyard without announcing what's going on? And we stake them out as just our spaces?
I mean,
because like my kids would have goldfish crackers in the jacuzzi in like 2 seconds. It would be disgusting. Needs to be just mom's spot. Well, Dory, last week your intention was to read a paper book in bed, and I'm actually dying to know if you did this.
I did not do this.
You know, I can understand why. So, it's very hard to read a paper book in bed.
Yeah. So, you know.
Well, you had also a bonkers week. Like, did you even pick up a book?
I did. I mean, I'm still reading Persuasion.
Okay. That's right. Perfect.
But otherwise, no. Yeah. So that's where we are.
What is on your plan for this week?
Yeah. So this week, you know, my foot is still not like completely healed.
Did you fracture your foot?
I don't think I fractured it. I think I would I think I would be in a lot more constant pain if I had actually broken my foot. But it's been almost 2 weeks and it is not fully back to normal. So I'm like, do I need to go to the doctor? So I decided if it's not better by Monday, I'm going to call the doctor.
Good. I think it's worth getting a referral to an orthopedic so-and-so.
Well, I think I'm going to start with my podiatrist.
Okay. If you need a podiatrist recommendation, I have a great one, but it sounds like you've got a podiatrist.
I have one.
Okay.
I go to our mutual friend's podiatrist. She recommended
Danielle?
It to me. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Danielle, who just broke her foot. So yes, that's a good recommendation.
Kate, what about you? Mm.
Okay. Well, last week I said I was going to find one really good family-friendly vegetarian dinner to cook this week. I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't. Honestly, I couldn't even tell you what we ate.
It was just fried. One of those weeks.
I'm sick of the act of cooking. If I only had to cook for myself, my life would be amazing. I don't. And that's just my reality. Mm-hmm. And, but I will say my nutritionist who I met with, gave me a really amazing, massive index of recipes that.
Ooh, that's fun.
Yes. And they're specifically sheet pan, pressure cooker, one pot, easy stuff to make.
We love that. So
I'm gonna revisit this, but also knowing that I can really focus on incorporating some lean meats in there, I will do that because we do tend to be a meat eating family. That being said, air fryer tofu is a hit, so I'll just keep doing air fryer tofu is the best.
Air fryer tofu. Yeah.
Have I gone off about the air fryer on this podcast?
I feel like we need to have a whole separate conversation about that.
Okay. Yeah. We'll discuss air fryers at a future date because that thing has changed my life in a way that the Instapot was supposed to do and didn't, the air fryer did. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everyone was like, this Instant Pot. It's just a big bucket that sits in my kitchen. But this air fryer is a big robot that sits in my kitchen, but I use it. Okay. Hmm. This week, Dory. Okay. One thing I did this week that really has made me happy is I bought some flowers at Costco and I made two bouquets, one for my little family room area and one for my office. And so they're on their way out. So I'm going to get more fresh flowers. It makes my office smell nice. I like looking at them. So it kind of just really cheered me up this week to have fresh flowers around. I hadn't had them in so long.
I love that.
So yeah. So it's a fresh flower intention this week.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Well, that brings us to the end of this podcast.
Indeed.
But not the end of our friendship.
No, not the end of our friendship, Kate.
I just like to look for a segue, but that one didn't really hit. That didn't really land.
What if at the end of one show, you were like, and this brings us to the end of our podcast and the end of our friendship. Goodbye. And I was like, what?
It's been great doing with you, Dory, but I'm done. I would never. Well, look, shall you say it?
Yes, we shall. Forever 35 is hosted and produced by me, Dory Shafrir, and you, Kate Spencer, produced and edited by Sam Huniao. Sammy Reed is our project manager. Our network partner is Acast. We'll talk to you all again very soon.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.